This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
I'm Natalia Melman Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2. And of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Amy Leibowitz, on assignment in southern Poland.
We are in the center of the Bojków now, and we see the church, we see the old school. Now it's the post office, we see the parish house and the main street.
Krzysztof Krasinski is a teacher of religion and history at the local primary school in this Polish village of 3,000 people. Until 1945, this was actually part of Germany, and Bojków was the proud German village of Schönwald with 6,000 residents. A large Catholic church dominates the main village square, where we're standing on cobblestones.
We are standing now directly on the stone which belongs to the street. This is original stones from the street. We collected the old stone and we put on this square, but we didn't know before that this is the silent witness of the Death March.
Krzysztof is referring to the death march from Auschwitz-Birkenau 80 years ago. Thousands of prisoners, mainly Jewish, were forced along these cobblestones by SS guards. Those who collapsed from starvation and exhaustion were shot.
So you're saying where we're standing here, this is where the prisoners walked past, right?
Yes.
Here?
Yes, this is the main street in the village. Now it's called Rolników Street. It's mean the farmer's street. Before there was, during German time, Bauerstrasse. And this is the street what we know that the death march was going. From the east to west, because the street is going directly from east to west.
Bojków's about an hour's drive west of Auschwitz-Birkenau, the largest Nazi concentration and extermination camp of the Second World War. It was finally liberated by Soviet forces 80 years ago, on January 27, 1945, a day now commemorated as Holocaust Memorial Day. I'm Amy Leibowitz, and in assignment, we're telling the story of the death marches, which happened a week before the liberation, and why this village has only recently discovered what took place on its main street 80 years ago. For me, as a Jewish woman, this isn't something from the past. It's a part of who I am, and it feels as important as ever to tell these stories, painful as they are. There's really only one place our journey can begin, on a grey, cold morning, just after our tour of Auschwitz, with my producer, John.
So we're in the car park of Auschwitz-Birkenau, and John, I believe this is your first time coming to Auschwitz?
It is. And it's a suitably cold day, sleeting, it's about 1 degree, so it is pretty miserable. And we're surrounded, as you can probably hear, by all these coaches, and there goes an alarm, and vans and cars. So many people here.
Yeah.
So many tourists in these huge groups. You know, first of all, we went into Auschwitz, the first camp, and we saw these buildings, obviously, we saw where they tortured people, and we saw where people died. The words death, murder, cremation kept on being repeated. And one thing, really telling things, was there was this corridor of photos of people, and they were mainly Poles, because they were early on, like 1941, 42. And what struck me is how short their lifespan was here, so many of them, 3-4 weeks. So many died really quickly. So those are the ones who weren't even chosen to die immediately. They were the so-called workers. And then we come here to Birkenau. Massive. we've only seen a wee bit of it. And the other thing that is really striking here is how regimented it all is. Those huts in lines, you know, it really was well planned. This appalling thing that they did.
Yeah, I mean, I find that every time I have come here, the part of it that really gets me is the room full of evidence. So the hair, the glasses.
A lot of hair.
A lot of hair. The talit, which is the Jewish prayer shawl. That, to me, it really gets to me, because when I come into these spaces, I think to myself, is that my family member's hair? Is that my cousin's prayer shawl?
Well, you better tell us about your family's direct connection with this terrible place.
Yeah, my great-grandmother, Rachel, and my grandfather, Ludwig, or Leo, were from Czechoslovakia, and they were put on cattle cart in 1944 to Auschwitz. And my grandfather, roughly age 15, was separated from his mother and put back on a train because the Nazis decided he was strong enough to work. And she was tortured, gassed, and murdered in this place, whilst my grandfather continued on surviving Gross Rosen
and another concentration camp
and Mauthausen and Ebensee in Austria by himself until he made it to a DP camp. Also, my great aunt Gita was in Auschwitz. I mean, I grew up listening to stories from her.
And then we were just shoved into this wagons. In the wagon, I was my parents and my two sisters and my brother. I remember my father asked me, do I think we'll ever get out of this? And I said, I don't. I remember that. There was only one bucket for the toilet. And then when we arrived in Auschwitz, I think it must have been dark. All I remember that I saw my father and my brother being shoved to one side, and my mother and my little sister being shoved to the other side. And I still had my younger sister with me. And they were mostly SS. And there was this doctor that was standing there and shouting, you got there and you got there.
I can still hear her calling me sweetheart in my head, and she passed away when I was young. And that had a profound impact on the way in which I view this place and the Holocaust in itself.
I still had my younger sister with me, and I was getting very scared that she might catch the scarlet fever that I have. And I see this woman that was limping, and she was supposed to be a doctor. And I told her to have a look at my sister, and she had a look at her, and she grabbed her, and she took her away. And I thought she might have taken her to the ambulance block. And I knew the woman that was like the manageress of the ambulance block. And I went in there, and they didn't want to speak to me. So then I knew that I had taken her away, and I felt like so I've died already.
At least 1.1 million people were killed in Auschwitz-Birkenau. Most of them were Jews. Tens of thousands of others, including Poles, Russians, Roma and Sinti's, homosexuals, anyone the Nazis deemed undesirable, were also murdered. There was a network of dozens of Auschwitz subcamps stretching across this region of Upper Silesia. The whole genocidal project depended on transport links, especially the Deutsche Reichbahn, the railways.
So lovely to meet you in person.
Good job.
At this point, it's important to meet one of our key characters. It took weeks to build trust and persuade Cornelia Stieler to take part in this program. She's done a lot of work, alongside Krzysztof, now a friend, to bring to light Schönwald's recent history. We met her with our translator Jacob in another car park, this time outside a museum near Düsseldorf in Western Germany.
It's the community of the
Also, die vertriebenen Community, wie kann man das sagen?
The persecuted people that were basically forced out.
Yes, mm. yes. And this museum is for save the culture of these peoples. They all come from East mm. and live now here in West Germany.
Okay. It's a heritage museum for those German communities which fled the East from advancing Soviet forces in 1945. That includes most of the residents of Schönwald. Cornelia shows us exhibits from the community, including Schönwald's famous embroideries. One hanging piece celebrating a 60th birthday stands out.
Oh yeah, because you can see on this embroidery it says 1945.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Und einige Tage vorher war erst der Todesmarsch, dann die Flucht der Schönwälder und alles yeah. war vorbei.
A few days there was the death march and then the Schönwälder were themselves fleeing from the Red Army.
Mm-hmm. So then when they were fleeing they took this with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Cornelia was born 20 years after the war. She lives in Eastern Germany and remembers when she was a child how her parents and grandparents would speak in hushed tones in a regional dialect about the terrifying days towards the end of the war. Her grandmother had a part of her earlobe torn off by a Soviet soldier snatching at her earring. It wasn't until years later that Cornelia began piecing together her family's life in Schönwald before 1945.
Ich habe mein ganzes Leben
All my life, I was collecting puzzle pieces in order to make a whole picture out of it.
Schönwald was established 700 years ago. Hard work and the Christian faith was at the center of rural life here. The inhabitants were German and lived secluded from the surrounding Slav population. Cornelia says when the Nazis rose to power, the town soon adopted their ideology. Many of the men were enlisted into the Wehrmacht, the armed forces.
Schönwald was directly at the border to Poland, and so the Nazis thought to themselves that this is a town that is a great example of how you can live like reinrassig, which means basically like as one race, surrounded by Slavic peoples, because the town was secluded, so for the Nazis this was like a model town.
Mm-hmm. Cornelia began researching her grandfather's past and discovered that he was a miner. But after an accident which trapped him under coal for 2 days, he felt he couldn't do the job anymore.
The family was very poor. He married young. He had old parents that, you know, he needed to take care of. A brother is disabled, so they didn't have much money. Grandfather was the only one that worked outside of the house that brought real income to the house.
But then he was lucky. He managed to get a job on the Reichsbahn, the German railways, as a train driver.
By the Deutschen Reichsbahn.
What do you suspect that your grandfather did as a train driver?
Ich bin mir relativ sicher, dass er einfach nur ein
I believe that my grandfather served as a train driver commuting between the death camps. And one thing that I was looking into that during the week my grandfather was staying in this boarding school in Liegnitz. I think why he was staying there is in order for my grandfather not to return home every day, to not spill everything that he experienced, to have certain separation from the family in his work in transporting people from the death camps and people between the death camps. When my grandfather started the job, he wasn't told at that point what he was transporting, and that could have been probably the moment where he could have left this work, but he missed that crucial moment. And when he was told that he was going to transport masses of people, he couldn't refuse.
This raised big questions for Cornelia, especially after training as a family therapist.
When do you say stop? When do you halt? When do I notice that injustice is happening and I need to go?
80 years later, after the fact, you're still trying to find out
what your grandfather did. Why is this important to you? Why now?
Ich glaube, es ist wichtig.
I think it's so important because of the development of people. People are not solely good or evil. People can go into jobs with good intentions, but very quickly you're suddenly on the wrong side. There's a development that happens. So this is a really important thing for me. And it's really important in connection to the development of a town that has high culture, high spirituality, and very quickly just folds into such immorality. This is a development that we need to understand.
Yeah, my mouth is like super dry and I have like a really high heartbeat. Listening to your story, I think about how your grandfather drove trains into Auschwitz, and that's how my grandfather was there. And I've never met someone with this experience before. So when I heard about these death marches in this town, it made me think of my own family's experiences of not knowing where my other relatives are that died in Auschwitz, that were murdered in Auschwitz. I kind of pictured maybe like when I was younger, if I'd met someone like you, that I would feel like a really strong, like, hate towards you. Mm-hmm. But I don't. Because saying all those things must have been really difficult to admit.
Amy, give me your hand. It's important. Your tears are very important now.
Your tears and my touch is touching me, and it's a result of a lot of years, 20 years and more work. Before, I don't find words or I don't have informations. I must search. My grandfather was train driver in Auschwitz. What can I say? Nothing. I cannot say apologize. It's not possible. It's too strong. It's too different, this experience. My grandfather, I think he feels very, very guilty. And he is tired about this guilt. He was a little bit than 2 years older than I. 62. He was not old. But he cannot live with this big guilt.
Yeah.
I think we need exactly this talk about what has happened. Thank you for your openness. I'm not guilty, but I'm born in this situation. We have this heritage in our baggage. It's also, this is healing work, but it's not easy, you can believe. And the Germans from Schönwald, they make a lot of stress against me.
Why do you think they do that?
Ich spreche wieder Deutsch.
Yeah, okay.
Die meisten Menschen können mit solchen schwierigen Erfahrungen.
Basically, it's the problem to accept history with its good and its bad parts. And a lot of times people only want to have the good parts in the history and shove the bad, dirty parts to the side.
Cornelia is unusual in confronting this uncomfortable history. There were a number of different death marches from Auschwitz and its subcamps in January 1945. With the Soviets approaching, the SS forced around 60,000 prisoners, mostly Jews, to move further west. Between the 19th and the 21st of January, one of those marches passed through Schönwald. In below freezing temperatures, the prisoners were dressed only in their thin, striped uniforms, with just wooden shoes on their feet. Krzysztof Krzyszynski, the local teacher, and Cornelia take up the story.
This is original stones from the street where the prisoners was going with the wooden shoes. And you can imagine if the wood you beat on the stone, it's a specific sound.
Dass es diese Todesmärsche gegeben hat, habe ich tatsächlich schon.
She says, I knew all my life that there were these death marches because my mother was 5 years old when she saw the death marches of the Auschwitz inmates, and she remembers the clacking of the wooden shoes.
And the people for sure from the village, not only they watched the death march, but they heard this terrible sound. This sound was going to the next village. It was a big sound, big noise. You can imagine, with the wooden shoes.
Also, wir wissen aus den Zeitzeugnissen.
What we know is that at these death marches, people that were too weak to walk, that collapsed, were directly shot. That people that needed to go pee and had to go into the snow in order to urinate were shot. We have a lot of witness testimonies and we're still collecting them. But one thing that we know that the next day the streets were lined with corpses, and that at one point the farmers were covering these corpses with straw from the fields and then basically disposed of the corpses.
It's estimated that a quarter of the death marchers died en route. They didn't get proper graves. We don't know how many died in Schönwald itself.
This looks like a soccer pitch to me, or a football pitch to me. Why are we here?
Probably nearby this place is where dead people from the death march have their own grave.
So this, where we're standing right now, beneath us, is the site of a mass grave.
Somewhere around, we don't know exactly, but we heard that when the death march moved from the village, the bodies was still on the street, and so that was the problem where we put the body. So some group, they make very quickly funeral, in the simple meaning, and they put the bodies somewhere here. But for them, was not allowed to put the bodies directly to cemetery.
Okay, so we've walked across the street and we've entered into the main cemetery here in Burgkopf. And there's just graves upon graves and so many flowers and candles. And it's clearly a Catholic cemetery. But of course, I can't help but feel saddened that the Jewish people that suffered in the death marches were not allowed to be buried here.
Yes, that was typical from the Nazi time, that the Jewish people, also the Slavic people, was not able to have contact with the truly German community.
I mean, Jewish people were seen as subhuman in this time.
Those prisoners who did survive the 55-kilometer march from Auschwitz, which they were forced to make in just 2 days, were put onto open cattle cart trains heading further west, usually to other concentration camps like Buchenwald. The Nazis wanted to hold on to their slave labor. Some even still believed in an ultimate triumph of the Third Reich. But for the residents of this very German town of Schönwald, the terrifying certainty was the Soviet advance.
The Red Army was coming very fast. And after the death march, the next who escaped from this village was these inhabitants of the Schönwalds. 2 days after the death march, they start to make own evacuation from the village. So you can imagine, they want to take care about themselves.
When they escaped, the people of Schönwald took the history of the local death march with them. And the Poles who replaced them after the war, who had been forcibly expelled from their homes in eastern Poland, now Ukraine, had their own trauma and were ignorant of what had happened in the village. In our search for evidence of a mass grave for the victims of another death march, we headed towards the city of Gliwice, formerly Gliwice, just a few kilometres north.
My name is Karolina Jakovenko, and I'm a boss of this beautiful, amazing former Beit Tahara, now museum, Upper Silesian Jews' House of Remembrance in Gliwice.
Karolina's showing us the cemetery behind this large, red brick, neo-Gothic building, a former Jewish funeral home with its older German Jewish graves, and, from 1945, Polish Jewish graves.
This is amazing, mixture of these two cultures.
What are we coming up to?
This is the mass grave of the prisoners of the Nazi camp, German camp. It was like four around Gliwice, sub-camps of Auschwitz. And here, when the prisoners left in January 45, the Auschwitz, there were like 60,000 of prisoners left Auschwitz. And we have these testimonies of people who saw it, the German people, who were still in Gliwice here. They saw that the roads in Gliwice were full of dead people. And, which is super extraordinary, about 75 people, we don't know exactly the number, but it is said that it was 75 people, were buried here in the Jewish cemetery. Probably they were all Jews. Of course, we cannot find out about it today, but we have these mass graves of prisoners from Auschwitz in the Jewish cemetery.
And so they were all victims of the death marches?
Yes, all victims.
But it's thought at least 3,000 prisoners died on the death marches to Gliwice alone. How important is it to continue on remembering this history? Like, why today?
Because this is forgotten history. And it was a huge thing. Of course, the people changed. I mean, those who were witnesses of this horror, of this death march, are not here anymore. First of all, they passed away. And the second, they were usually German people who were moved from here. Other people came, Polish people. And among the Polish people, there were Jewish people. But this is not, you know, a topic for the dinner. This is something very, very serious. And nowadays, again, because the history is repeating. That's why this is important to not forget.
Back in Boykov Cemetery, Krzysztof has taken us to a large black and brown marble headstone with inscriptions in Polish and German.
Now we are in the front of the mass grave. It's the place where the bodies of the German Schönwald people, which was killed in 1945 by the Russian army. After the death march, the Red Army came to this village, and those German who don't escaped, and Red Army make this massacre. And now, in this place, we believe there is around 200 bodies.
So the German community has a memorial here to remember their trauma. But for decades, there hasn't been one for the victims of the death march.
Now we are preparing a very symbolic grave. And this grave we have here for those who was killed in the Schönwald during a death march.
So finally, 80 years later, the victims of the death march, those that were quickly buried across the street underneath the sports field, and now getting the recognition of what happened to them here in 1945.
Yes, this is not an accident that this monument is nearby the sports field. It's very symbolic because it's the idea of the German community. And we collaborate with the Polish side.
What about the Jewish community? How are they involved?
We had contact with the Jewish community, and they decided, yes, this place is very good because it's on the main street in the cemetery. Everybody who is coming, watch this place. And we know that in the death march was coming many nations also. So this place is for everybody. The Jewish can come and put the stone. The Catholic can come, put the candle. The other people can put the flower.
With the support of various organizations, a new memorial was unveiled on January 19th, 80 years after the death march passed through Schönwald. It's only right that Cornelia, who's done so much to resurrect this history, gets the final word.
Wir können die Zeit nicht zurückdrehen. Wir können das nicht ändern.
We can't change the past. We can't turn back time. But it's important to talk about this, to remind people of what happened, to remind them of what humans can do to one another.
Was Menschen anderen Menschen antun können.
That was Assignment. I'm Amy Leibowitz. The producer was John Murphy. The program was mixed by Rod Farker. The production coordinator was Gemma Ashman. The editor of the series is Penny Murphy.
I'm Natalia Melman-Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2, and of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme. Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.